Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Kerry Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Kerry Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Be starting something.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have 8 arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s, and the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw it, and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything, you really do. And you outline it there, you put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just some great things historical content, reference. And then my other part of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection of artifacts and things that that document the African American experience or the African experience, I guess, if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole
thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about the, I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into, or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, what
so
happened is I left it up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000, 6,000 miles on my thumb, pretty much all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life, that really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day, and
How old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
point. Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
so then, what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know, obviously we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids, their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course you can imagine when I was 25 years of age when this happened. And my first year, my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me!" And so it was earning their respect, but I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to the sincerity of my heart by asking questions. It's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward, that was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world. So I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male growing up and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time. And I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say, a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. It was a BBC series, a man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, Part 1, Part 2. The Promised Land, about the move from the South to the, especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it. I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me to ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009. And I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So
wow.
That kind of was the genesis to... And then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection. And Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, and plus they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff. Also, Secret Service, 4 years in a row, FBI, just fascinating stuff that
wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors, and I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or Black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's what's motivating him. And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had, like, the shackles, if you will, for, like, that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica, and I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. And he brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shackles they have available. And for them to do that, I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Stephen Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Carrie, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross the no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I tried to bring more of an international view, and because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America. In fact, there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it. But it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish. So that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also I have... What I've tried to do with the collection is I tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who have been under the boot of slavery and the trade. And you know,
and what have you found
Jim Crow
for the most
laws.
Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, you know, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. And it what it basically is the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging lynching, the black code laws, and just the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that are it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the Blades of Grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, I think I've got problems. You know, I mean, here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, you know, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big, my ears are too small, my hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, mm-hmm. her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the internet? I guess I should ask.
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
right now,
if
I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. Wow. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where could you find one? You know, someone might say, well, I've got everything. No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or, you name the names mm-hmm. Out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And I'm so, I think we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who I just, we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there. And it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure. Right. But it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that
yes,
that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, "You're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right?" That's what they're telling us.
Oh,
and they said, you're wasting your time.
That.
You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is. You can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book and who are you and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from some interviews from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology, and I think in that direction, began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence. That all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly has, it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression to just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy while I'm moving from one part to the next, never to be revisited, but a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a let's say a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech. If you're from Yorkshire or Scotland and you're talking with someone who is from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it, you know, personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment. And I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me a story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment, when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. He was no more than about 6, 7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that when I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, he says, I rose very pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there. And he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. And remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as an African, a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About three, 4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit. And he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye, and as serious as a heart attack, he said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Carrie, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard what he said to me. And I thought, I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray, I began to talk to God. I said, I want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize and repair as best as I can. Now, I think that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
that. Cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, our next-door neighbors, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think it could have a profound impact on our, on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days when you had the hibachi grill, and you put the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they catch fire. And
yeah.
So I just think if we can get just some people that are hot coal,
mm-hmm.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And
wow.
My book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain. Click, 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 and it's uncomfortable. Turn the music off. turn the external stimulation off and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step, because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. It's not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come into that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important, and it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot, and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit. You know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Terry, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values, and I detail that in the workbook called "If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand." It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking the idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community, where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with, let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth, you know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for. And so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that, and how did you we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet, the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone, about Madam C.J. Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Right.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
Yes, go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was.
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks, I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to porocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters. Poro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first people in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And,
who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionaires of African descent, women, female millionaires in the country.
And that's what I'm getting.
Timing.
Why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both and all the things that they
no
stand for.
They're both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher?
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head. And felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced, let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became, she was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, you know, clean, it was orderly, it was you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once, after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed in 1926 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's where the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All the time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So
yeah, G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work, and so he became a beautician. And of course, his songs just took off, and he never went back to it. But
right, amazing. So okay, well, that explains a great deal for us on that, because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
some people make great personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business
choices. It's the opposite, exactly.
Good personal choices.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we kind of knew a little bit about, or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things, but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today. And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it. Sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We've got you now. And there is a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis, because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about. And I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information. I'm just very grateful. Now, I have to say, before we close out, I had mentioned this at the top of the interview. I love the quotes that you've assembled. I don't know who wrote them, but I just love them. And these are just a couple of them that I just said, oh, wow, how great. Patience is not waiting. It's how you act while you're waiting. So that's one. I love that. And I think that says so much. And my other favorite that I seem to just picked up again from looking at, started at freemaninstitute.com, and I saw this, and it's like, age doesn't always bring wisdom. sometimes age comes alone. I just love that. That says it all. So I want to just say you are just extraordinary. So
you know what?
You
People
are.
Say I'm,
you're extraordinary.
I'm an expert in this or that. I'm not an expert. I'm just a student. And so I'll always be a student learning.
Wow.
You know, like someone once said that you can't learn with your mouth open. You know, you
right.
just it's just more of a situation. You know, you just really want to. I'm always someone that I want to just learn. You know, because generally speaking, you aren't learning much when your lips are moving. And so I just
well,
want to be a person who listens at least twice as much than I speak.
I
did a lot more speaking today than I like to do.
that's exactly what I was about to say. It's okay when your lips are speaking when they're educating so many people, countless folks who need to hear what you have to say. So I am so grateful. Now, are you on social media? We need to find out. Are you on social media at all?
I'm on Facebook. I've got about 16 pages. In fact, there's a page called Black History Collection. It's the only one on Facebook. Got over 10,000 followers on that. And got some very, very cool stuff on that. And then, of course,
well, you're
my
about
name,
to have 10,001. Okay.
There's Black History Collection right on the Facebook page. And then,
sure.
of course, I have my own personal Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with anybody. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and who knows about me and all
okay.
that kind of stuff that's out there.
So we can find you. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have you back, as I said, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Well, do you have any closing thoughts? You've been so kind to just share your perspective on all of this and just someone who has done so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of inspiration or encouragement?
Well, I do. I think, speaking of the hair and beauty industry, you know, I just see how Asians have pretty much taken over, and I'm not mad at them. I think they just took advantage of a situation that was open and available. I've developed a 10-year plan on how African Americans can take back the hair care and beauty industry, starting from the top down and the bottom up. And I think Annie Malone figures very much into this. I would love to see this booklet get into every beauty parlor, every beauty salon, every barbershop in the country, and have people learn about Annie Malone. And then I'd like to see the most senior people in the hair care beauty industry from the old guard companies, the new guard companies, come together. In the first year, not even deal with business things, just develop relationships. To take a look at the elephants in the room, to walk through all of that, to deal with that, and then have a united, just not a united front necessarily, even though that's important, but united, just be united and to really become good friends and understand how important this is. And then in the second year, start developing manufacturing and then distribution, and little by little, I think that there's a whole willing audience built around Annie Malone's story that could be wide open, because people will not buy black just for the sake of buying black. They want to buy something that is a good price, that's easily available, it is distributed well, is manufactured well, and you just check all the boxes off, and then someone will say, okay, now I'll buy whatever that product is. If it happens to be black, that's what I'm talking about, is to create a whole industry that can because without the if the consumers are trained and understand what's going on, I think, and then there's a product and manufacturing and distribution all set up in place to deliver it, I think that within 10 years the whole industry can turn around and it can become something that's well within the African American community. But I think Annie Malone is the key for all of this.
Well, I just want to remind the folks, and the book that you're talking about exactly, the title and how we can get our hands on
that
book
again. It's Madam Walker's Role Model. It can be found on Amazon, eBay, but if someone goes to Poro College, P-O-R-O, Paul Ocean, Ralph Ocean, polocollage.com, they can see how to order it. And I think it's such an important piece of history. You know, Carrie, I reached out to the leaders in the hair care beauty industry and only found two or three that even knew who Annie Malone was. And I said,
exactly.
I said, you know, that this is an important thing for people to learn about her so then they can begin to reanimate her legacy.
Well, I'll tell you something. It starts today. Dr. Freeman, I want to thank you again for being our very special guest right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to have you back to kind of, you know, continue this wonderful conversation. I think it was a great start, and you've helped to peel back just a little bit for us. And we've got some work to do. We've got some work to do. So we're going to have you back. Well, listen, I want to thank you again, and you, please remain on the line, Dr. Freeman. I'm going to close us out here, and we're going to chat. All right, folks, keep it right here. There's a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Thanks so much, Dr. Freeman.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
Wow. I'm always asked why and how and who and what and where and when. Like, what really, why does it matter so much to me that people succeed? Well, I'm Carrie Hines, and I think it's something that I take on a personal level. Just like you, I had folks who might not have been able to really see what your talent or your vision or what you're all about was really about. And we need that support. We need it. I'm no different. But when I really began my business journey, I just could not stand by and let others fail. So I've done everything I can to inspire, encourage, uplift. And I think it matters. I think I see it here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. Each broadcast, the responses, the feedback. And it's telling me that we're on the right track. We're on the right track. Support us. Pass along this incredible gem that we have each morning. Pass along what we do here and the economical opportunities to advertise and help shape our communities. It's up to you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that. because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge. And tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
All right, it's Wednesday morning, May 18th, 2022. I'm Carrie Hines. It's our show number 715. That's 715 as we march towards our 1,000th show. There's so many things to get to in this mid part of the broadcast this morning. Lots of updates and all of that, of course. Plus at 8 o'clock this morning, so in about a half hour, we're going to have the former mayor, Wayne Smith, who was the Jersey, we call it Jersey mayor, but he was actually in Irvington, New Jersey for 3 terms, and just checking in with him. There have been some primaries and some, I just thought it would be good to kind of check in on some political happenings and also talk a little bit about civic responsibility and all of that and so much more. So, but the very first thing I want to get to this morning would be to bring one of our announcers here, live announcer, Otto, to the line. Good morning, OTCO. Otto, good morning to you. Happy Wednesday.
Good morning.
To the show.
Oh, thank you. You too, Curry. Right. Happy Wednesday to you, buddy.
Yes. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Feeling good. Beautiful day. And listening to the show and learning.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk all about that in just a bit in our coffee, tea, and conversation in just a moment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to bring back to the line. Well, you know what? Let me let you do the honors, Otto. And take it away, Otto. Who's up next?
Thank you. Joining Curry live on the Hair Radio Morning Show from Water Valley, Mississippi. It's my great honor to bring to the line now Nicole Marie.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nicole Marie.
Happy Wednesday.
Yes, happy Wednesday to you.
And all of our listeners, good morning.
Yes. How are you doing? We certainly missed you here on the Hair Radio Morning Show yesterday.
Yes, I missed you too. It's so great to be back with you this morning.
Yeah. Well, you know what? For the folks who tuned in, it was a very, very special broadcast yesterday. And I do want to talk a little bit about that in Coffee Team Conversations this morning on the show, because I listened back to the entire broadcast, Nicole Marie, and it was because it was such an emotional broadcast. And the whole show I listened to from top to bottom, and I thought it was a very interesting show, and of course I enjoyed so many aspects of the show. And when I heard let me just backtrack for folks who did not tune in. There was a part in the show when we did, you know, normally do our coffee tea conversations, which is about 6:30 if you're in the Central Time Zone, 7:30 if you're in on the East Coast. And this is always mid-show when we come in and talk about quite a few things and announcements and program notes and, you know, and just an official mid-show live talk of morning. Well, my plan was, it was our Monday, technically, well, for those of us who work on the show, because we don't do a live broadcast on actual Monday. So Tuesday's show is our first time back on the airwaves live, and we are just so excited and rambunctious. So my whole plan was just to come on and read a statement that I had written about the Buffalo shooting that happened. And that was supposed to be it. I was not going to go and talk. Had no idea that I'd be caught up emotionally in what so many other folks around the country are dealing with, all of the senseless acts. And so all that to say that I heard it back, I literally listened, and I said, oh, my goodness. I'm glad that I said what I said. I just, you know, have to repeat the part about inclusivity. The Hair Radio Morning Show is for everybody. It was inspired by women of color, and it has, and that's kind of, will always be our foundation and our you know, looking to connect with the audience. But I am so proud that the Hair Radio Morning Show has come to include so many other elements that represent everybody in our community and beyond.
Yes.
And so I'm just happy about that. And so with that being said, I listened back yesterday and I said, oh, my, wow, that was emotion. We've got to remember to, you know, everybody's a little emotional about these are hot button topics. And to a big degree, there's just so much with it. We just have to have responsibility when we are in the broadcasting realm. And that's what we're in. We are a media company, like it or not. We are.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that folks know that we're for everybody and we welcome everybody to the broadcast. And so that's essentially what I want to say. I don't know if you guys heard it yesterday or any thoughts. I don't think we had a chance to talk about it. And Nicole Marie, you weren't here. But anything you guys want to say to add to that, this is a good time to do so.
I think it was so heartfelt, and I was touched. And like yourself, I hope for the best for the families, and I'm really speechless. It's back to you, Curry.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we're not going to retry all of that so much. Nicole Marie, did you have any comments?
I did hear your comments on yesterday, Curry, and just like Aldo, I thought it was very heartfelt. I know you said that you had prepared to just read the statement that you had written, but this is so emotional and just touches home for so many people that, you know, you just have to share. It was on your heart, and you shared exactly how you felt, and it was very touching. I enjoyed listening to it. It was very necessary, and I just thank you for sharing.
Well, yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. The good news is the feedback was incredible. Folks were very pleased. And when I listened back to the entire show, it was such an enjoyable experience on the different things that we had talked about. So
right.
It was a great time. I really, really enjoyed the broadcast. And I, you know, encourage you guys, you can easily find it in Google. Today, as I mentioned in the mid-show talk, it's our show number 715, 715 episodes today. So that means, and you can find every one of them on Google. All you have to do is literally put in a search for the five words as follows: The Hair Radio Morning Show. Real simple. And all of our shows will pop up. You listen to whatever you want to listen to. So
yeah.
With that, yeah, of course. You just Google the show. So just want to kind of talk a little bit about some other things. Upscale Magazine, I posted on Facebook. Want to shout them out this morning. They have sent over an early cover for the June-July issue of the magazine. And I'm so proud of Upscale Magazine. They have just done incredible work, and we're shouting out all the folks over there. And we're just very proud. So I believe I'm in the masses, so you should find me in there somewhere. The magazine itself, it's all over the, you know, on the newsstands from coast to coast, so you should be able to find it at, you know, out and about. And then also, there will be, I'm sure, an online edition, if it's not there already, at upscalemagazine.co. And then for us, we'll keep you informed because we're also working to launch their network in about 12 days. So I'm super excited, and we're excited, and we'll keep you informed on it. So lots of good stuff. And then the other thing I wanted to mention about that, Nicole Marie, I didn't know if you wanted to talk a little bit on Upscale Magazine, the radio network, the magazine in terms of some updates and things like that, that people can stay abreast. We'll talk about right here on the Radio Morning Show at least once a week. But any thoughts, you're going to help us to lead the charge.
Yes, just would like for everyone to tune in. We will have be discussing stories from Upscale Magazine. So would like everybody to tune in.
Yes, we'll keep you informed. Okay. What we're going to do, of course, I think a couple folks will be joining us in just a couple minutes. Listen, we're going to take a little bit of a commercial break. We'll be right back and see what else we've got on tap for you this morning. I want you to stay with us. Lots more to get to.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned. That the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
I have a product called Organic Love Collection Shea Butter. It's a sensual shea butter. And once you apply it, it reinvigorates the skin. It takes care of blemishes. Hyperpigmentation. It has all kinds of beautiful oils in it. And what it does for the hair, the nails, and the skin is to renew it and to make you feel beautiful and moreover to restore you to self-love and self-care. We're a Christian organization and we're in the community trying to educate people on eczema, psoriasis, breaking hair, alopecia, things of that nature. And this product is a cure-all for the whole family. If you grab the jar or the bottle, it comes in a liquid and solid. It deals with eczema within 3 days. The longest it'll take is 7 days to restore your skin. And most of all, it's great for the scalp and very uplifting to the hair. It keeps the hair moist and free of breakage. And moreover, manageable. So as you work with it, if you have natural hair, it won't break. And if you have permed or color processed hair, it'll continue to allow for it to have the elasticity it needs so that your mane grows beautiful and healthy. Currently, we are on social media where business is just starting out. So I started on Instagram, once again, Instagram. And the name of the company is Organic Love Collection. And we can also be found through Instagram on Big Cartel. So the product could be purchased at organiclovecollection.bigcartel.com.
Repeat that one more time.
Organiclovecollection.bigcartel.com.
We're having conversations on hair. Today we are talking with Daryl Thompson Hair. On Instagram, it's Daryl Thompson Hair. And we want to talk about this big topic today. And everyone has been talking about alopecia and the Will Smith and Chris Rock slap and how important it is to our community about hair loss. So I want to talk to Darryl today, who is a hair weaving extraordinaire. He's been doing it for so many years, and he is the personification of an expert. So we want to ask him, how do you feel about alopecia, and do you think it is an important topic in today's society, and especially when it comes to hair weaving? Darryl, what do you think?
You know, I think it's definitely a big subject. You know, we as hairstylists, and me for myself, I will say, is somewhat guilty of not getting a lot of more research to understand what alopecia really is. And there have been instances in situations to where I had to refer people over to someone else that knows how alopecia works and understands it. And I think it's important to understand it because it's becoming to be like a big thing since the slap with Will Smith and Chris. It's just different now because people need to understand the whole point of alopecia and the importance of it. I think it definitely causes, particularly women that deal with alopecia, is definitely something that's deeper than many of us think, because some of us may have never really dealt with alopecia, so we wouldn't really understand how some women feel within themselves that struggle with alopecia. So I think understanding it more and being able to relate to it better will make a hairstylist that doesn't understand it a better person. And so I took it upon myself, you know, later on, I want to study more about it and understand how to treat that type of thing, because it's just not my arena, but I would like to know a little bit about it so that I can see when it begins to start, or be able to have discussions with, you know, potential clients that may struggle with alopecia. You know, there are some times where someone with alopecia may not be able to get a hair weave or a hair extension because their hair is currently going through that transition of losing a hair. So it's really important to understand, see what stages they're in so that you can be able to refer them out or recommend them something else, as opposed to making the matters worse or even more challenging.
Yeah, so that's why I brought you on, because that's such valid information, and there's so much to unpack right there. And when it comes to like traction alopecia, there's a plethora of different types of alopecia, but the one I wanted to focus in is on traction alopecia, because a lot of our community, especially as African American women, they tend to associate hair loss with braids, with extensions, and not understanding, because it's something that hasn't been communicated in our communities as we were coming up as hairstylists, as we were coming into the hair space, say like 20, 30 years ago. We just attribute it to just hair loss. But there's so many things like stress, medication, like we said, traction alopecia, not having your extensions done properly have contributed to hair loss for the woman 45 to 70, you know, because it was something that just wasn't talked about in the community. We just accepted it as is. And now that it's on the forefront of, you know, people's tongues and in the media, it's something to say, okay, wait, maybe it is this, or maybe this caused that, you know. And when we look back at like relaxers and how we now say, okay, we're going to give a relax, or we're going to give a Tex-Lax, or we're going to only relax up to 65%, whereas before it was the norm to say, okay, 85 to 100%, and not knowing why the hair was shedding, you know. So that knowledge wasn't common amongst And then our community also is guilty of selling home kits, you know, allowing the novice to be able to relax their own hair at home, having no idea. All they wanted to see was it being straight. So and that contributed to scalp damage and follicle damage and all the different things that have contributed to where a lot of women are past 45 in their hair condition. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, do you run into a lot of traction alopecia? And you just stated that you do not, if you see that the scalp is damaged or the hair is damaged or too weak to carry the extension service, that you will not do it. Do you run into that a lot? And what is the demographic on who you see that has this issue?
Well, you know, the thing of it is being me putting myself out as an expert in hair extensions and hair weaves. I get a lot of calls from women that may be struggling with some type of hair loss or some type of issue, and maybe they're assuming that I can, you know, do certain things to cover their baldness and, you know, in that area. I'm not a hair replacement expert. I do a lot of hair extensions, but when I and hair weaves, but when I deal with situations like that, I normally have to consult with them because I need to see exactly what's going on with the scalp. And a lot of times what I'm seeing is either traction alopecia or some women that may just have some kind of issue where they're losing hair and not understanding why. And so I can't put a Band-Aid over that because I don't understand, first of all, what's going on internally. So a lot of times I recommend them out to, you know, people like trichologists or dermatologists that can understand what the problem is.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is we begin to, I guess, advertise ourselves as being hair replacement experts and not really understanding what comes along with that whole big picture, as opposed to, you know, segmenting what it is that you actually do and giving them an understanding, because there are a lot of situations where a hair weave or a hair extension is not going to work for a person that's struggling with that. So I see people that of all different, you know, I see some women that are white that may have that issue. I see black women that have that issue. But I'm finding that it's more, I'm finding that it's more in black women that may struggle with that issue. And so I think the importance of understanding that and really being able to identify that is important. Even with traction alopecia, you know, what happens a lot of times with traction alopecia is either the stylist is braiding or applying the pieces of hair too tight, or either the client isn't coming back on a regular basis to have that hair replaced and redone. Because, you know, there's buildup and a number of things that causes the scalp not to breathe, so then that causes traction alopecia. And then you go back and take the hair out and see that there's an issue and you put the hair back in. Sometimes it's important to give the hair a break the hair can sort of restore itself and recover and then come back. So that's just important to understand that, and that's sort of like where I am with that whole piece of the hair weaving and hair extension space.
Okay, so it's very important, not only for the consumer, but also for a stylist to understand that it's not always about making money, it's about making the right choices. And in those choices, like you said, that if you see there's an issue, you would recommend someone in trichology, because that's their expertise, to examine the scalp and examine the hair and to see what's going on a molecular level. So what my question is now is, so many people have come into issues when it comes to traction alopecia, and I just listened to what you said, and every point that you made is valid. And it's up to the stylist to be responsible also in making those judgments to whether it's not about making more money off that client, but what is doing the right thing for their hair and scalp health, correct?
Right, exactly.
Exactly. So some of the solutions that I have seen on the internet and things that people talk about, people talk a lot about black castor oil. What is your view on black castor oil for scalp treatment, say, prior to a service? Do you think it's beneficial, or do you think the misinformation about black castor oil has bombarded the internet and we need to have a better understanding of what black castor oil does and does not do?
You know, I'm actually tired of a lot of the different gimmicks that come on that this new movement that people are having discussions about this makes your hair grow or
right.
that does this hair. But it's really, and then you're actually putting black castor oil on your hair and the hair is dry. So
yeah.
if you're looking for moisture, you can't put like castor oil on your hair while it's dry because it's not going to create any moisture. The only way you can get moisture is that if the hair is wet and you put oil
Correct.
On it. So
Correct.
that's just another misconception of how to use, you know, black castor oil. But, you know, I just don't feel like I don't feel like it's something that's going to make the hair grow. I don't feel like it's going to do anything really to the scalp. It's just something that people are talking about. There may be some benefits from it, but it's basically in your DNA, and it's hard for me to explain that to some people that I may have discussions with about your hair is going to grow if you use this or a certain length, and no one seems to understand that your hair is only going to grow as long as your DNA will allow it to grow.
Correct.
And that's just it.
That's
but,
that.
You know, black castor oil, I kind of stay away from those kinds of items, those kinds of products, because it's really not benefiting the hair. It's not benefiting the scalp. And I may have some flashback about that or some negative feedback, but I feel like it's just some type of a movement because people are really into the natural hair movement. And, you know, it's all about oils. But every oil is not good for a person's hair or scalp. You know, everybody has different chemical makeups, and some people's hair may respond to this type of oil, whereas somebody else's hair may not respond the same way. So it's really finding out what works best for you, the individual and their scalp.
Yes, and I totally agree with that because, you know, and you know, you have so many people who swear by black castor oil. Some people swear by Minoy oil, like you said, it's all up to the individual and their hair structure, their DNA, and how their hair receives products. Some people are high porosity, where their hair is open. Then you have some of the low porosity, where the cuticle is laid down and doesn't receive product as easily. So it just all really goes down to the individual and just doing research and trying different things in order to accommodate the scalp and accommodate the hair texture and the hair type. You know, you are located in Northern Virginia, correct? Where exactly are you located? What city?
I'm in the Tysons Corner area out in the Vienna, right out of Vienna. So I'm near all of the popular malls in the, you know, the high-end shopping centers, all of the Louis Vuitton stores, the Gucci stores. I'm in that area, and I've met a lot of people in that area, and there are people that come from all different parts of the area to come see me, you know, based on the information and the skill that I have, and, you know, just maybe some of the recommendations that I've given. Because a lot of people that I see that come to visit me, I may not end up doing their hair. It may be something else that I would have to refer them out because I'm not, you know, an expert in that. And so, but it's a really nice area, and I like the area that I'm in. It's very transient, if you could say it that way.
Yes, amazing, because I went on your website, and there's only 5-star reviews. You are the man. And I was like, okay, all these good compliments. I love it. Yes, 5-star. So can you give the listeners your website, please? I know I said Daryl Thompson Hair, and that's on DTH on Instagram. But let's give them your website so they can check out all your fabulous stuff that you do.
So my website is Darrell, D-A-R-R-E-L-L, Thompson, .glossgenius.com. And that's where it's sort of a booking site, so it kind of gives you a little bit of detail about what I do, a little more information, some illustrations and pictures of some of the foundations that I've done, and just some things that can kind of help you navigate to what it is that you feel that you need when you come to visit me.
Perfect. Darrell, I thank you for your expertise, and I thank you for always being my brother in the hairstyling industry. We always got each other's back, and thank you for your knowledge and your years of experience. You are always a pleasure to talk with, and guys, look out for more stuff with Darrell Thompson Hair and Eugene Davis Hair. We are trying to change the industry one conversation at a time. Thank you, Darrell.
You're very welcome.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Kerry Hines.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Kerry Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
All right, we're back live. It's Wednesday morning, May 18th of 2022. I'm Kerry Hines. It's our show number 715, and we are in our third hour today. And, of course, if it's between 8 and 9 Eastern time, that's 7 to 8 Central, we have always a spotlight. And this gentleman who is returning today, the first time past our, I should say, north of our 700th episode, is the one and only, the incomparable, the former mayor from Irvington, New Jersey, who was the mayor there for 12 years. And he's been with us many, many times. Big friend to the Hair Radio Morning Show. He is our man with all things business, politics, and just all things cultural. We are talking about Wayne Smith. Good morning, Wayne. I could go on and on and on who you are and your accomplishment. But then we never get to the hour that we have you with us today. So how are you? And welcome again.
I'm wonderful and good to be with you this morning on your, I think this is about the 715th show. So that's
right, today. Yes, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, right, right. So just to salute you for keeping on the air in a very difficult media and business climate. So you should be commended for doing so.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, Wayne, I also have to say, you know, I am so proud. Coming up a little later in the next segment, I can't wait for you to meet my incredible new co-host.
Okay.
Her name is Nicole Marie, and she is out of Water Valley, Mississippi. And so she's standing by. She has some things to talk with you about. One of the things I know are the local efforts in the community and getting folks more involved in the local aspect of local politics and all of that. So we're going to get into – we have a lot to unpack with you, Wade, so I hope you are ready.
All right.
I hope you had your coffee this morning. So I have to first lead in with this, Wayne Smith. First, I want to kind of talk about there's some big things we're going to get to. Let me just give a little bit of a rundown because I want the fans of the show to know we're going to get to everybody's concern. First, if you would like to call in, perhaps you know, feel free to do so. We are here. Our telephone number is the 516-453-9458. Press 1. We're live this morning on this Wednesday, May 18th of 2022. Right now it's about 8:08 Eastern time. So listen, the first thing I want to kind of break on down, Wayne, over the weekend, it's just been horrific news. And yesterday and even this morning, I think I talked a little bit about it. But yes.
Now we got disconnected. I wonder if I should call back in. Yeah, maybe I should call back in.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree. And I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
Okay, that has not really happened in probably ever. But anyway, it's live radio, folks, and just about anything can happen. But it's so funny, I'm just talking up a storm and kind of leading on into any comments that you wanted to share about the incident and just, you know what happened. So whenever that happens, you guys, if it happens to you, and you are dropped off and you're listening to the show, just dial back in.
Right.
If there's a technical issue on our side, just give it a couple minutes and dial back in. Usually we take care of things right away here.
Right.
Wayne Smith, our guest today on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Again, we're live this morning. And I wanted to kind of lead on in with this. The former mayor out of Irvington, New Jersey, you're a businessman, you're an entrepreneur and doing so many different things. But Wayne, I've got to say how, you know, I was telling everybody how I was affected by what happened with the mass shooting in Buffalo, New York over the weekend. But did you want to comment or make any kind of comment?
Our prayers go out to the families who were affected by the tragic incident that happened at Tops Supermarket in Buffalo. I mean, and when you look at the ages of the people, obviously it was a you know, family people out just getting their groceries for their families. Who would ever think, as you were trying to provide the staples for your household, that you can't go into a supermarket and just a tragic incident? And they say it would have been worse had not been for the valiant efforts of the retired police officer who was working security at that time. So it's just horrific. You know, just to see how the development of the individual who did the shooting, what kind of mentality they're fostering. Certain people are fostering this a climate of hatred where it could instill in a person to just go out and methodically pick a location where, you know, primarily our people are shopping to kill them. And it also goes to the, you know, even what happens in some of our black churches, what happened in South Carolina. You know, it just shows you how vulnerable we are as a society and how easily people like I can't describe it other than this crazy person, because they're able to get guns and suit up in a military-type fashion and come out and kill somebody. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who, you know, did 10 years with the United States Marshal and a whole career in the Department of Corrections. And we were saying, you know, just moving away from just the supermarket, this has happened even in some black churches. And, I was telling him, we had this conversation, I'm sure when the Nicole Marie joins us, we'll have a conversation about that, because even with incidents like this that's happened in our houses of worship, FEMA has money out there that is educating and helping houses of worship get security. And some people don't know about it. And I think it started as an impetus from what was happening in Jewish synagogues. So, I mean, you know, you're shopping, you're at a house of worship, and, you know, our heightened sense of security I just don't know what to say. It's just a tragic situation. But, it bears to wonder in our neighborhoods what we must do to secure our life and limb.
Exactly. No, I think you said it quite eloquently, and I totally agree. And just, my goodness, what else can we say? It's just, just to kind of be, only because we have a lot to get to this morning, but we're going to have to bring you back on that, because we need to have, I believe, an entire show devoted to the things that seem to protect the gun manufacturers, where as it pertains to lawsuits, the type of things. It seems like they cannot seem Congress to get the basic, agree on basic common sense things, which none of it right now it just flies in the face of common sense. So many mass shootings and things. So it's the whole country, I believe, minus the NRA and a few folks, those folks, their political and all that kind of stuff. So, Wayne, I do want to turn to quite a bit of other things that are happening out there. And I don't know if you saw this. They had a couple of primaries. Just some quick things, I think was in the news even just yesterday, and some things that are happening on the political scene, and we'll get to some of those things. But and coming up, and I definitely want to have a big talk with you about, we cannot skip over the elephant in the room about the Supreme Court leak document. Wayne, I'm going to ask you about it in just a bit, because my big question to you, is the leak more important than what was leaked, and why does that seem to be, okay, I'll park it there until we talk about it.
Okay, no problem.
In addition to so many things I want to talk to you about on that. but anything you want to add to this whole thing about getting folks out, even in the primaries and all of this that's starting to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think more than ever, if you have a point of view or you're passionate about a particular issue, the electoral process is one of the ways you get it addressed. And so, you know, when we talk about this Supreme Court case, it shows you that, you know, every election, whether it's local or it's national in scope or it's for the Congress, we're facing these midterm elections. It is important who we elect, because some of the powers invested by the U.S. Constitution, by the state constitution, by your local government charter, invest in elected officials the ability to do certain things. And so in the Supreme Court case, you know, the makeup of Congress gets to confirm judges. The president obviously nominates judges. So now when we thought a situation was settled, that that was the law of the land, it shows you over time people can reverse the law. And that's why even in the Supreme Court, they have a minority opinions, because those minority opinions can become the majority decisions. But again, that's why elections are important. The infrastructure from local level to national level determine what happens to our lives. And so people make decisions based on the laws of this country. And, you know, we have to be engaged at every point of the process. And that's why it's important to participate in these elections. You know, I think in Pennsylvania you had some races, Dr. Oz,
with the support of Dr. Trump
and might be the next.
Yeah. Mm.
Might
He's got
be the, next.
The right name.
He's Oz, right? He's the wizard, huh?
Yeah.
he's got
I'm
many
sorry,
faces.
I couldn't resist that. Sorry about that, folks.
So yeah, so
I'm sure you were thinking it out there.
Yeah, well, listen, yeah, with a name like that, you can't help but see. But here's to that point: the cardinal rule in American politics and brand building in business is if you have name recognition, whether you're Coca-Cola or Dr. Oz, you can affect the public.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
people
and
know, at least they start
right.
out, we know who he is, we have an idea of who he is. So you have to beat back all this convoluted media landscape to get into people's head for them to go out and pull a lever. So he used his media celebrity. You know, he had not been in politics, but the same way Donald Trump used his media celebrity and business press. And it worked for him all the way to the White House. How, with all the other baggage that they, you know, that they carry, how they do it. But the cardinal rule is if you're known, good or bad, you can get elected.
This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
On the planet Earth today, folks. It's possible that my line here probably needs to be rebooted. It seems like it's an electronic. It seems like every so often your gadgets, electronic gadgets, you've got to reboot them. You got to turn them off and restart them. Sometimes they're rusty, and all of that. That you're like, if it's your cell phone, that you have to stay on top of, and I have not updated my line in forever. So what the cell phone companies usually will do, they make it so that your phone keeps cutting off to force you to reboot your phone. Yeah, and I used to work for one of the big ones out there, so trust me, I learned. I don't know how well I learned, obviously, but I learned. So listen, and I didn't want to just throw on, because I want to keep you out there and in the space of what we're kind of covering this morning, and so many things. And just to go back again for you guys out there, again, my guest today is Wayne Smith, former mayor out of Irvington, New Jersey. And we're going to be joined with my amazing new co-host, Nicole Marie, out of Water Valley, Mississippi, in just a bit. But, Wayne, I want to kind of turn back. You mentioned even on the Buffalo, just to go back for a quick second, what really went through my mind, it was like bringing a knife to a gunfight, you know, when you have the security guard. And I felt so sorry, how brave of him, as you pointed out, but trying to, and the guy is all in all this tactical gear or whatever, and the poor security guard just, just, it's just too much to bear. So I just wanted to mention that. So, you know, it's just crazy. So just wanted to kind of go ahead and get that on out. But don't you think you know, it's just, it's lopsided.
Yeah, and so you talk, it's going to affect society in a way that some of these places are going to have to ramp up security. And does that mean that every retailer now, a supermarket, has armed security, a highly trained individual to protect the public? And, you know, and so, you know, businesses are going to have to make that decision. And, of course, you know, they transfer all of those expenses on to the consumer. And though we need security, you know, it's always a cost to everything that we do. Are we going to be walking through supermarkets through metal detectors in the future to protect ourselves? And, you know, people say we shouldn't live in a society where it's overkill about this stuff. But, you know, when a few of these incidents happen, you wonder, because now people are going to be afraid they're walking into a supermarket. I mean, you know, we try to get back to normal but that's not normal when things like that happen. So what do we do, or how hyper secure must we be or have to be in order to try to secure ourselves, our life and limb, over basic things like going to the store to pick up some milk or some bread? Wow.
Yeah. Do you need to hire a personal bodyguard to go to the market or have a security escort? These are the types of things that start to come through my mind. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Is there anything that
it's beyond crazy. It's wow.
Exactly. And then to make the link back to politics, the president was on yesterday talking and condemning race over. Some of it feels a little lip service kind of thing, but of course we totally agree with his sentiment, and so when you look at this, and even going from local to the national political scene, and you just were talking about the upcoming midterms, which seems to me that things are going to kind of potentially if we don't get out and do our due diligence to vote our what's in our best interest, things could change the current makeup in Congress. And so something to think about. Anything on the upcoming midterms, Bill? I know you touched on it earlier, Wayne Smith. Anything you want to add to
vigilant, and I think I'm sure we'll get into further discussion when we talk about the Supreme Court occurrence, but you know, it is – so I think that's going to be a point of energy between the pro-choice forces coming out in numbers to try to make sure that they at least can influence the electorate. I don't know if the protests are going to affect this stacked court at all. That's a fear, even though the decision has been – leaked, and whether or not it is just perfunctionary for them to go forward with whatever their vote is going to be, we shall see. But I think the leak itself might have provided an impetus for the pro-choice forces to come out in numbers to try to affect the outcome. And the other piece of that is, now if this Supreme Court case stays, it's going to be a state by state battle over this issue. Which means you got to be even more vigilant about state legislatures and the governors who serve, because if it looks like the Supreme Court is pushing it back to the states and taking away the federal right, then that means you got to pay attention. And then if you look at some legislative races in our country, they have very low turnouts. They usually ratchet up when the governor's up with some members of the legislature. But if it's just the state legislature around the country, it doesn't bring a lot of excitement. And so people often fall asleep, and those who are most energized about their particular issue usually carry the day. So
yeah.
I think for the Democrat-leaning community, the pro-choice crowd could help us carry the midterm elections, because that's going to be the battleground, whether or not Congress changes hands and ties President Biden up where any of the things that he proposed or wants to do can get done. I mean, we got two United States senators that holding up a lot of things that he wanted to do. And that's,
Yeah,
Senator Sinema and Manchin.
Manchin.
And they're members of... they're members of the Democratic Party. So it's going to be a battleground for what they say the hearts and minds of the public. And that's why wherever you are on any particular issue, you got to get out there, and voting is one part of it. The second part of that is making sure that your views are heard, because people vote, and then sometimes they go home and leave the decisions up to their elected representatives. But if you can write, you can call. You know, some people protest. You know, that's why companies and you know, even some causes, they educate or lobby their state legislator about the issue and how it affects people. So we've got to move up a step. Voting is one thing. You know, sometimes you influence the process by your ability to contribute, and sometimes, you know, if we're not millionaires, like some of the millionaires have an inordinate amount of influence on the process, our small contributions, particularly on the local level, can make a difference for people. And our letters to the, you know, we can still write, we can still talk to people, we can still influence people, we can encourage people to get out there and vote, we can go to meetings and make sure that our voices are heard. And if we don't, you know, we get the government, you know, there's this expression, you get the government you deserve. So whether you didn't vote, that says something. When you vote, that says something. When you do participate, that says something. When you don't participate, that says something.
Exactly.
So, you know, some people say if you don't participate, you shouldn't say anything. Well, you know, listen, this is an American society. We all have the freedom to do practically anything we want, but there's a cost to every decision we make.
Wow, I love that, because that applies to everything in life, and thank you for that, Wayne. Now, listen, lots to go in this next half hour. Of course, we are bringing to the line Nicole Marie in just a moment, who has been doing gangbuster work in local politics down in Water Valley, Mississippi. And so I'm real proud of her to have her as our official co-host. But I want to turn to you just for one moment on this, Wayne Smith, because you yourself, to talk about your career, 12 years in office in Irvington, New Jersey. Wow.
Oh,
yes. Huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
And we're so proud of
you. You know, navigating any political dynamic, you know, is a tremendous challenge. So, you know, I was fortunate, whether it was the colleagues I worked with, the community that I worked with, we were able to at least get opportunity to serve. And so part of what I think people should look at when they're picking, or people come to them wanting to get elected, you know, make sure they have a heart of service, because the number one issue I think people should get into public service, and that's what it's called. It's called public service, is that they're there to serve the public. So some people take elected officials and they put them through this celebrity status ring. It's not really a celebrity status ring. It's really your ability to serve the public. Now, you are invested with certain powers and responsibilities, but they're given to you by the public. And so you have to make – and part of that is trying to get a gauge on what the public wants. So, you know, we live in what we call – what's supposed to be – they call it representative democracy, that you get elected to represent people, not to represent yourself.
Exactly.
So, you know, people should gauge when they when they're you know, people approach them about, you know, give me your vote, you know, what is their attitude or their philosophy about this whole concept of public service? And then what does that mean and what do you propose to do? And that is your opportunity to also influence the process by saying, this is what I would like to see if you want my vote. And, you know, whether it's about, you know, the alderman or councilwoman that we have on for Mississippi, usually legislators have three powers in that they make the law. Local legislators, state legislators, federal legislators, they're lawmakers. They make the laws of whatever governance they're over. They usually have the power of the purse, so or appropriations. That means they have a major say in the budget. That's why when you use the city council has to pass the budget, the Congress has to pass the budget, the state legislature has to pass the budget. So they really have a major say-so about the dollars and how they're spent. And then most legislators, because I was a city councilman before, I was a mayor.
You're going to have a great deal to talk about with Nicole Marie. So we're going to listen, Wayne Smith, I have to tell you, normally we take all kind of little extra commercial breaks and this and that, but today is a very special broadcast. And if you guys are just joining us, I'm Kerry Hines, and we are live today on this May. What is it? It's May 18th already, my goodness, of 2022. It's our show number 715, and we have the incomparable Wayne Smith. He was the mayor in Irvington, New Jersey for 12 years. We are so happy to have him. Welcome him back to the show. Wayne Smith, I also want to just remind some of the folks that you were the very first president of our very own Hair Radio Association. So you have really helped to help us get this thing off the ground and on. We are closing in on well about 900 members and still going strong. And all the beginning efforts made such a difference with us. So we just appreciate you here. And and I know we're going to talk about the whole thing with the Supreme Court in just a bit. And Nicole's joining us as well. But I also wanted to mention that you yourself will be launching your own radio show right here.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. You know, part of the upscale process that you've now engaged in. And so I'm looking forward to that. I saw you had on the air, I think she was the CEO of Upscale.
Oh, yes. Yeah, right. The COO, actually, yeah, that's correct. Miss Millie, we're going to shout her out this morning. She always sends me little messages and stuff. And I just posted onto Facebook the cover for the June-July issue. So that will be nice. And Wayne Smith, you're going to be one of the very first shows that will reach and, you know, directly to the Upscale, on our Upscale network that we're going to talk about in days to come a lot more. So that's really it on that, Wayne Smith. You know, I could talk to you about all these things. We really need, we have to have you on the network because there's so much. And you're so incredible with all that you're doing, and we're just very happy to count you as a person that we know. Now, listen, Wayne, I've got to say this, okay? Let me just get on the, you know, like you said, you started out in local power, well, local in the way of the city council there in Jersey, and which is just amazing. And my very brand new co-host, I don't think you could be any more brand new than Nicole Marie on that level in terms of radio, but I'm super excited because just to have her involved in local politics in Water Valley, Mississippi, she is on the city council there, and I'm honored to have her as my co-host. So you guys, I'm surrounded by all of this, and I love this about now where we can talk about the efforts on how important local politics is. And as you pointed out a little earlier in the show, in the segment about how it shapes and kind of pours into the, you know, the bigger elections and all of that. So it's my honor to introduce Nicole Marie and Wayne Smith. Guys, welcome both of you on all these politics and all these things today. Good morning again, Nicole Marie. Good morning. Marie, welcome again. Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Smith. So nice to be speaking with you this morning.
Wayne, are you able to hear us?
Oh, yes, I'm fine. Yeah. Nicole, my pleasure. Nice to meet with you and talk with you this morning as well.
Yes, most definitely. I know you have spoke about so many different topics this morning, and I look forward to future conversations with you because I have so many questions for you. But this morning, I want to touch on local politics and just ask you a couple questions from the local level. Just like Carrie said, I am a city council member here in Water Valley, Mississippi, and so passionate about my community and getting members involved in the community and actually standing up and voicing their opinion and making their voice heard. First question is, how do you encourage the everyday citizen to become involved in the community and step up to the challenge of civic responsibility? Because that is a challenge.
Absolutely, and it takes some tremendous amount of work and some tremendous amount of organizing. But I always start with the first basic unit that we have as a society, and that's our families. So start with start with people's families and try to get them organized to get involved in the civic engagement. So usually, if people have children, you can usually encourage people to get involved at the school level. So it's important for every local community to have active PTAs. And once people get involved with their school, they know how important everything relates. Schools usually get their funding from every level of government. Teachers usually respond to parent participation. And so I think that's one level that we get people involved at. The other, what's the population of Water Valley, Councilwoman?
It's approximately 3,300 people.
33, so in my estimation, that's a very small community. So to me, that it should be a little easier to organize. So 3,300 people. So I don't know if you have like neighborhoods, but, begin to create what I call, in a city we form what we call block associations.
Yeah.
So that everybody who lives on a block becomes, you say, hey, look, if there's any crime issues on the block, the way we fight crime is we have a block watch. And we bring neighbors together, even a neighborhood watch or a block watch, so that we begin to do those things that people are concerned about. Look, usually people get engaged if a house gets broken into, a car gets stolen, somebody breaks in a car. So now we got to, sometimes people don't even speak to each other in the kind of society we live in today. And I know in the South that you wasn't always the case, but I know when I go to the South, even the South has changed a great deal. So people need to know who their neighbors are. You start out either block associations or a neighborhood association. And then you move from that to trying to get people to get their city government to be more responsive. So when you have these kind of associations, whether it's a PTA or a block association, it gets to the basic human level of organization. What is my quality of life where I live, where my kids go to school? What can we do to make it better? And that's how you usually pique people's interest around the question of politics or government or how government is performing. And so, you usually get people, they didn't pick up my trash. Okay, well, maybe we should come to the council meeting and so that the mayor and the council know that your public work operation or sanitation function isn't functioning. So then people say, oh, that's the reason why you go to the meeting. So it's always hard work. You know how hard it is. I always say we have to work harder to get people engaged than we do sometimes. We work very hard to get elected. And so we have to kind of put that same almost engagement to civic. And people will say that to you from time to time. They said it was easy for me to find you when you was trying to get elected. So we need to do it. And I always always deplore all elected officials to be as vigilant about that after they get elected, because people will call you to task for that. Yeah, we can find you when you was trying to knock on my door for that vote, but when I need some help. So, you know, that's why I say it's always important, and Councilwoman, I'm sure you're a person who believes, as I do, that the spirit of service, or you wouldn't even be concerned about that question. You obviously want to get people engaged. Yeah, you want to get people engaged. And that's the key. When people aren't engaged, society doesn't get better. It gets worse.
We're seeing with that play out right now. very important. I think if there's one takeaway for today's live show, Wayne Smith and my amazing Nicole Marie, new co-host here, is that you got to be engaged. And I think that's really what prevents a lot of crazy stuff from happening. It makes people feel a part of the process. Everybody's included in this, and we're all here together. I'm so honored. So I'm just happy to have someone who is just doing gangbuster things out there, Wayne Smith. And you have been really at the forefront of things, I have to say. Now, coming up a little bit later before we close out this morning, I have not just Nicole Marie, who is an amazing co-star right here on our broadcast, but also out of down in Jersey, the southern part of New Jersey, out of Hamilton, I've got Otto, who is one of our on-air announcers. He'll be joining us with the last question today, so I can't wait to hear what he – never know what he's going to ask, so we are real excited to find out. And, again, he's from Hamilton, New Jersey, so not a little distance from Irvington. Okay, but
– No, yeah, Hamilton is right outside of Trenton, the state capital.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the – yeah, the trains for you guys in the Northeast, the New Jersey Transit trains, I think, that they created out there. Yeah,
right.
So not bad at all. Okay, Wayne, I have to turn back. The big, as we said, the elephant in the room that's been looming throughout the whole broadcast, and one of the things that I really wanted to get you here today to kind of really, even though you gave us a good preview earlier on this whole thing about the Supreme Court, I got to tell you, and listen, I've got to say it the way I think that folks want me to say it, which is how I feel. And I remember when quite a few of the when the former president started right before Biden, the president who was in office then, had done so much, in terms of, kind of stacking the Supreme Court, so to speak, which, is what is expected to when you have the president who was in power and the opportunity comes up. But the thing is, it seemed that this is my opinion, and, don't send me your letters because they will not be responded to. But they just seemed a little not so qualified, in my opinion, personal opinion. That's just me, Gary Hines. They just seemed thin, inexperienced, and they were talking, and then all kinds of accusations flying all around. To me, if these are the people making the decisions that affect every aspect of our lives on a federal level, and then, like you said, in some cases pushing things back down for the state to handle, we're still affected. And to turn back, this Roe versus Wade, the whole thing with the leaked document. And I kind of want to lead in there as well, Wayne, with that. To me, it just also seems that the focus is on why it was leaked. Well, I don't know, unless I misunderstand things, I'm kind of grateful that it was so that we would know, because without knowing that, this might have just been, a middle-of-the-night type thing, where the folks move out of the neighborhood or move into the neighborhood in the middle of the night.
However that was leaked, and I'm sure that, we haven't heard anything about the status of the investigation, at least not much, other than that they're investigating to see how that got out. But, certainly that leak broke a tradition. So the pro-choice community was you know, I think grateful that it was leaked because they were able now to have a battle plan to deal with it so that people who want to have the right to an abortion can develop a battle plan. So I guess there are two kind of strategies that I see that they have deployed. So though they say judges are supposed to not be influenced by public opinion, and we hope that they're not, they're human beings. So I'll just leave it at that. I think, you know, public opinion does matter. And so some people are out early protesting and making sure that there's a counterforce to their decision. Number two is it appears based on the early writings of this leaked opinion that, you know, they're forcing it to be a state-by-state issue.
Right.
And so people
are also... Can you speak to that, Wayne? Can you speak to that a little bit? Can you? Would you be kind enough to speak to that a little bit?
So traditionally in the black community, the state-by-state issue, whether it was around voting rights or others, wasn't always in our best interest. So having the big arm of the federal government involved, or having federal law so that you have one standard across the country, is important. So where you don't have kind of two forces of law, I can get this here, but I can't get this here. And so based in our history, though, there is this legacy, rightfully or wrongfully, about states' rights. So there's always been this tension of those who, with the federal government, especially around issues like civil rights, voting rights, has been our savior. Now, the Supreme Court already destroyed the Voting Rights Act. So the force of the Voting Rights Act, which was primarily in southern states where they had discriminatory practices and around voting, the Voting Rights Act helped deal with those issues. Now that's eliminated. So now you have all these voter suppression laws that are, you know, state by state, because elections are run state by state. There's no one federal standard for elections. People don't know that. So on this issue where around a choice, they're trying to move it to the states. So some states who are pro-choice have already enacted laws so that people can get safe abortions. Other places
who come from folks who might come from out of state into
So I was just reading in the New York Times the other day that when this whole process started many years ago, people were coming to New York where they could get a legal abortion many years ago. And that looks like what's going to happen now for many. Now, there's been this argument made that for people who are impoverished, that they don't have the ability to travel like that. And so if they're in a state where there's going to be restrictions on the abortion process, they'll be forced to. Now, the other piece is, does the decision mean there's no relief for people who have been raped or incest or whatever? So we'll see how they deal with the nuances of this. So that's one level of debate, and the forces will take those challenges on. The second part of that is the tradition that the Supreme Court has never had their opinions leaked before. So some people say, you know, that's a value as well. This world, we would not have found out about some of the abuses in society if we didn't have whistleblowers. So whether that's the law or not, or the tradition, it's more of a tradition with the Supreme Court that leaks never get out. People are passionate enough that somehow or another that got out. So the purists about the court said they are more alarmed about the leak than they are about the issue.
and that to me is a way that you get folks distracted. You want to,
you just say, hey, it should have never been leaked out. Well, okay. It was. Now, deal with your internal issue, but we're glad that we know. So
we
state our position on the record about what we want and how we deal with it. So But so it's so so. But this is a stark reality. So
yeah. Well,
it
while
shows,
we're on the subject. Go ahead. I'm sorry. It shows what?
It shows that when people thought the abortion issue was settled by law. But so the opinion came back where the court did a whole cycle term. That's
right.
Why elections and who serves in these places become so important. People say nothing changes. So it looks like the Voting Rights Act. We got the Voting Rights Act. If what is given can be taken away, and that's why eternal vigilance is necessary on these processes. I'll stop with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was just going to say, while we're on the Supreme Court subject, Thomas's wife, Justice Thomas's wife, alleged connections with some of those real extremist organizations that are out there. Now, this is alleged.
There's some that said that she colluded with the insurrectionists.
Well, not to be so leaning, if you will, but it's pretty obvious.
There's a path for Justice Thomas to recuse himself from any deliberation the Supreme Court might have around June.
That's kind of common type sense to me. But again, things that are happening, may not be so common, wise as it is, as it seems. So,
I think he should recuse himself too, because some of the things is not, they used to always say in the law that sometimes the appearance of conflict is just as great as the conflict itself.
Yeah. Well, I promise that Otto Matic, our latest on-air announcer who is just doing big things out there. Otto, you're on with everybody this morning. You've been listening to the show. What's the last question this morning for former mayor of Irvington, New Jersey? Former Jersey, we'll say, Wade Smith.
Good morning.
Otto again, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Smith. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have a special respect for you when, Curry, and you're on the show. My grandfather was a mayor in the early 60s of a small beach town, and I just had a question. I think you answered it, but I never knew the history. I was so young. Do you how to become a mayor? Are you voted or are you appointed?
Mm. Okay, so this is interesting.
Thank you.
And so both of us are Jerseyans. So in New Jersey, they have different forms of government. In my case, I was there's a law in New Jersey called the Faulkner Act, and they have what they call a strong mayor form of government, where the mayor is actually an executive. And so I was elected by the people directly. Some places in New Jersey, you have council members who are appointed by other council members as the mayor. Councilwoman Marie May, I don't know what her form of government allows in Mississippi. So, but in my case, I was directly elected by the people, and I had certain powers invested in me. There were certain directors I could appoint directly, some I could appoint and have to get confirmation from the city council. But in that form of the Faulkner Act government, it's a strong mayor. You really do have executive powers. And so, you delegate. Obviously, you can't do everything as the mayor. You have a budget, your finance director, you have department heads and all of that. But they are accountable to you. You even have an administrator who works in tangent with your philosophy to make sure those things get carried out while you're doing some of the other duties of a mayor, like lobbying to get resources to your community or whatever. Now, also in New Jersey, they have a committee form of government where they don't even have what they call council members. They have a town committee. And then out of those town committee members, they select who the mayor is, so the mayor isn't directly elected.
I gotta jump in, and as we start to wind down here, I want to thank you, of course, and thank you, Otto, for that question. Wayne Smith, I want to say on social media, anything you want to tell folks, how to contact you out there. Of course, there'll be
feel free to reach out for me. My website is WayneSmith1.com. You can reach me by email at waynesmith442 @gmail.com. My phone number is 973-204-5639. I do business development consulting and around marketing, PR, and obviously some local government affairs consulting. I help firms grow.
And feel free to reach out. We'll put you in touch with Wayne Smith. Wayne, I want to say also shout out to your amazing wife who does her own business thing out there. Can you tell people, just remind them about what she's doing these days?
So she's a fashion blogger, but she just opened up a jewelry showroom, curated jewelry, costume, but high-quality stuff. It's located at 50 Union Avenue, Suite 501B, Irvington, New Jersey. She does business right in the township of Irvington, right in the center of town. And so please check her out. Her company's Dazzling in Style. She's on all the social media platforms as Dazzling in Style, whether that's Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn.
Awesome lady, folks. Just doing big things. Wayne Smith, thank you. Thank you so much. All right, tomorrow, folks, on tomorrow's show here, we'll be talking about upscale, mid-show live, and we'll have some surprises and big stuff on Fan Day Friday. Again, I'm Carrie Hines for Nicole Marie, Otto, and our incredible live guest today, as you just heard, Wayne Smith. I want to thank you for being part of this episode and a whole lot more to come. This is just the beginning, and it goes by so fast. So we're going to get the outro on. Wayne, great job. My goodness.
Oh, well, thank
great
you, sir.
Job.
Talk to you soon.
You got it. All right, here's the outro, folks.
Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at fixyourfeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has two locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the amazing Troy Ballard, of course, from the West Coast out in Southern California. His company is called Smooth Black Ink. Now, he offers the very, very best in hair care for the entire family. He is a legendary hairstylist and educator. And also, he's a program host right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We just appreciate him again. That's Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Ink. Also, we are talking about a complete line of products for the guys now. It's that Rugged Evolution. Now, Rugged Evolution Beard Care is